Well, hello and welcome to All Good in the Brotherhood podcast. A couple firsts today.
Yep.
First standing podcast.
Yeah, that's awkward. This kind of feels uncomfortable.
Yeah, it is a little weird, honestly.
It's like a stand-up meeting.
And you're a liberal now.
Yeah. He's a progressive.
My first, at least filmed episode, not in my habit.
He's one of those progressive monks.
Yeah.
I just plumb forgot it when I drove out here. Mainly because, I was initially, I brought the podcast up, I didn't know if we would actually do it. And it's roasting outside. It's like 90 degrees.
Yeah.
90% humidity. Yeah.
And I figured we'd be outside like playing pickleball or something, so I wasn't going to bring my habit. I did, like, in defense, I was at a summer camp all last week, and I played paintball, I went swimming in a lake, I went rock climbing in my habit.
You went swimming
in
your habit?
You swam in your habit?
Yeah.
Oh.
Also he's paintball, bro.
Still lucky he didn't drown.
There's
again.
No way. That's, yeah.
Well, it was pretty low. Like, I mean,
that's
it was
crazy.
Like maybe 4.5 feet at the most.
Wait, but paintball in your habit's weird, bro. How did you get all that out?
It washed out really quick. I basically put my habit in the washer twice a day. So it was great. It was an awesome time. But yeah, so as we call it in the monastery, I'm in my civvies, which is the same thing military calls being out of uniform.
Yep.
So because of that, I thought maybe we could talk about like the overlap, like the contrast or like similarities between a monastery and the military. Because Tom was in the military. Our parents are both in the military, so not that we like grow up.
He still has the same haircut as he did.
Yeah,
when
I pretty much still do.
Yeah,
I cut my hair literally this morning.
I got my
hair
yesterday.
That's disappointing.
Also kind of short.
That's tough. That's wow.
But
that's why he's wearing.
That's why I keep my hair.
Somebody did him dirty.
Yeah, the Clippers.
That's worse than
the
your
yesterday.
Tauncher.
And so she only had like one height that worked, and she's like, "Well, it's all going that length now." I'm like,
"Oh wow,
maybe I'll just like skip there."
Not
today.
A tip.
But she was already like halfway up my head, so it had to.
And then as progressive as he is, he's like, well, I am a monk, so I should probably, like, not care what my hair looks like.
I should. It's like one of those, well, Father Barnabas says, like, with the habit on, which obviously I'm not wearing, so this, it means less.
Yeah.
But the only two things you have left to customize are your hair and your shoes.
And your beard.
I guess that's true.
Too.
Yeah. So, like, I do.
And
I,
the habit
I
or the
care,
absence of.
I care too much about my hair, I think. So.
That's fair.
Anyways, well, yeah, can you can't care about your hair.
Yeah, there is. There's some exceptions. At least there were historically. This administration might change whether some of the regulations are flexible to the unique needs of an individual. But generally speaking, yeah, there's no preferred grooming standards in the. There is the Army's grooming standard, at least in the Army. The Marines not any different. Navy. Navy probably doesn't get too much flexibility. Those Air Force people, they kind of get to do what they
chair
want.
Chair Force get to...
Chair Force.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, so...
What would you do if you had to have your hair regulated, Nate?
I would probably just actually go with, like, short hair. Not what Tom does. Dude.
Not what I did to myself.
What do you...
Literally.
I just don't understand why you
crazy.
Do that.
He
you
still
look,
does.
You look older every time you do that.
Yeah.
But
that's true.
You looked so sick 2 days ago.
So sick 2 days ago.
You looked like
I did. I had the longest hair that I've had since COVID.
And yet you didn't get your neck.
It's because I shaved it this morning, but I haven't shaved my neck.
I can clean you up after this.
Yeah, somebody needs to tidy up the neck for me.
Neck hair is like so cringe.
Yeah, I mean, I tidied up your neck before
you
were
in. You have beard on your neck right now, bro.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know.
We're calling each other out.
I literally shaved this a day, like an hour ago.
Yeah, you
my neck
dark.
Hair grows very quickly.
That's
yeah.
true. Neck beards are just so tricky.
Father Barnabas called it monkey fuzz.
On the back?
That seems almost like too nice for it. I feel like it should be
a
something.
Creepy monkey
yeah,
fuzz.
Creepy
yeah.
monkey fuzz.
Incel monkey.
Okay.
All right.
So, military and monastery.
Yep.
Overlap. Well, I don't know. Like there
uniforms.
Actually, yeah. Well, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Uniforms.
Wearing a habit, wearing a uniform. Why do you think it's like important that we're all wearing the same like thing? Like for the military, what do you think is like the meaning of that? And like there's a monastery meaning of it too. But
oh, cool. Well, I'll talk through. I think what are some of the maybe because I think there's many reasons. So I'm only going to hit probably a couple anyway. But I'll hit. I think the most basic goes back to wearing a uniform that helps you blend in with your environment. So there's a reason why camo patterns are still like we went back and forth. It's actually really interesting. So there's kind of like the World War II era camo patterns, which were a little bit larger blobs. They were a little bit more, like, less seamless. It was a little bit more put, you know, less put together. And then over time, we kind of evolved based off the environment. So you have the war on terror where you had, like, Digicam or whatever it's called. And it's the more, like, small blocks. And they were, like, a very pale green and, like, a tan to kind of help you match a desert environment.
Yeah.
And the thought was that the digital pattern would actually help obscure, like, longer range optics. I don't know if that was ever proven or not, but that was kind of the rationale there. And then we've now gone back to what's closer towards a kind of more Vietnam era or even World War II era camo pattern. There are the blobs are smaller than they were, like, from that era, so they still look more put together, a little bit more seamless, and they have some of the tones of, like, the desert camo, but they're back to a more muddy environment type of camo. Go ahead.
Sorry, did that transition happen before you left or while you're still in?
While I was still in. So I had both uniforms, both the Digicam and the new...
Which one do you like more?
Oh, the new ones are so much better.
Yeah.
They look like you actually are, you know, in the Army. So it's neat, though. There was other branches that kind of moved towards that, too. So it's kind of unilateral, just trying to get closer to that common look. But yeah, so that's one. It's just the functionality of the uniform. I think another bigger part of it is just the recognition that when you are matching the guy or gal to your left or right, that there is a little bit of, like, we are on the same team mindset. Teams wear uniforms, you know. Mm-hmm. You're not an individual. And that's one thing, like, drill sergeants in boot camp, sometimes it was just absolutely hysterical the way we'd be like, somebody's being an individual, you know, and, like, in our westernized society, individualism is great. That's rugged individualism, be your best thing. And in the military is not that at all. It is 100%. You are a widget. You're a cog in some cases. You know, like, you do the bidding of the United States government.
You act as an individual, you either get kicked out or killed.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you don't get to choose what your hair looks like or what your uniform is. You are part of this bunch and you belong to this bunch. Yeah. You lose your identity, and it's almost a way to kind of surrender your identity, you know, and surrender your individual nature to become part of this larger thing. And, you know, it's not like, I think a lot of people look at that or hear that and be like, oh, that sounds so terrible. Like, that sounds, but there's something, one of the more positive things I think about joining the military and why I still think it's something that Christian men specifically should always at least consider. Doesn't mean they all need to do it, but they should at least consider it, kind of like a vocation, is that it is surrendering yourself to a higher calling of a nature. It's not the same as a vocational higher calling, mm-hmm. but it's willing to surrender yourself to something bigger than yourself. Not just what I want to do. I've definitely met some guys who I think would be really good, like really good soldiers, really good military types. And I'll still hear, like, I just don't really like being told what to do. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, that's an interesting thing. You know, like, especially as Christians and Catholics, there's quite a few things that we are told that we have to do.
Yeah.
And not that the military's version of that is the same as the catechism or the Bible, but it's you got to be willing to recognize that when you're kind of surrendering that identity, surrendering that individual freedom for a higher calling, there's virtue in that. Even with all the challenges and the struggles that you have, as you know, many people just don't like what the military has done. Maybe people don't like what the U.S. government is doing overseas.
Yeah.
I don't think that's even exclusive to, like, a political paradigm. It's just some people don't like that we're involved over in this zone or involved with that country, etc. But recognizing, again, that you're surrendering yourself for a higher calling, you know, the defense of your country, the defense of your nation and your family. So, some similarities in the uniform just kind of, I think, all come back to that, just, like, being willing to surrender yourself. So
I think... Just real quick.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting that in an environment where the goal is to achieve things fast and very practical things like survival, overcoming an enemy, mm-hmm. you know, winning a war, winning a battle, in those very dire situations, we recognize you can't afford to be individualistic. Mm. You have to be more tribalistic almost, where it's like there's a clear leader and then you as an individual get absorbed into his, you're a tool for following what your leader says and like being obedient.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's really funny. We as Americans hate that idea because kind of written into, you know, even our understanding of the Bill of Rights and just the way that we live our lives is this rugged individualism where we don't want even the government to tell us what to do. And that's kind of a conservative principle that in some regard we agree with. We want the government out of our pockets, out of our lives. We don't want, you know, any authority to tell us what to do. And many of us Americans. That's why Parallelism of Americanism doesn't jive with Catholicism, is some people, mm-hmm. Christians, don't even want any church authority to tell them what to do or what to believe.
In fact,
I've been talking with a few friends about this recently. The it was called the American heresy, or the Americanist heresy, in the late 1800s, which was condemned by a pope.
Wow.
It was basically the heresy of, it predated relativism, but it was almost like a American form of relativism, where American Catholics would take the ideas they have from their political beliefs, which is, I have the right to express my own opinions, I can differ from the current government beliefs. They would take that and then try to apply it to their Catholic life and say, oh, we should approach theology, or we should approach the beliefs of the church in an almost democratic way.
Wow.
And so
that was the 1800s?
Way back in the 1800s.
That's like, crazy.
And it pervaded for a long time. Fulton Sheen actually responded to it a lot, too.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, like, we still, so many
I think there's still versions of
the
cafeteria Catholics.
Exactly.
You know, like, I vote on the church teachings that I want to subscribe to, exactly. And then I don't, you know, for the ones that I do.
And then also there's, like, just a strong, like, sad cross influence of, like, one's political beliefs and, like, beliefs in the faith.
Yeah.
That, like, which one do they let influence the other?
Mm.
And more often it's like, let my political stance influence my Catholicism, influence my Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And the what becomes really problematic is if you say, like, I'm a conservative Catholic or I'm a liberal Catholic.
Mm.
You actually put your political party
before
your faith.
Yeah.
It's the modifier for the kind of Catholic that
you're exactly. You should never label your Catholicism either of those
ways.
Yeah.
But as soon as you do, now you're saying, like, well, therefore, my Catholicism, like, what I choose to believe in it, is dependent on what I first believe in my political party.
Yeah.
And then it falls into this Americanism idea, mm-hmm. that it's, like, what I choose, or, like, what, like, we choose as a collective is, like, what's important and what we believe,
exactly.
rather than what we're told.
Right.
And that's why, like, they also just, like, really, like, even those Catholics also have, like, a lot of distrust for the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
Because now he's an authority, not an American authority.
Yeah.
But also,
and he's a monarchy. The church is a monarchy,
exactly.
not a democracy.
So there's a strong, like, American spirit to rebel against the monarchy.
Just the last thing I wanted to say about that is, the same way in America, I think it's cool that we recognize you have to let go of individualism when it comes to a dire situation like winning a war or surviving. We should take that same idea with Catholicism, where it's like, we're not in a state of spiritual peacetime. We're in spiritual wartime. There's a spiritual battle going all the time. So we should let go of that individualism in our lives. But.
And to contrast, like, the idea of unification and being willing to surrender that, like, individualism is not the same as, like, let's broaden the aperture so much that we accept everything so we can. Because there's a lot of community building, you know, types of ideas there that have led to watering down of truth, too. You know, it's like we need to center around the harder truths and achieve that unification there, including the surrender that comes with that. Mm-hmm. And, I think the military has aspects of that. You need to consolidate around simple things,
right.
to defend, defend your space and take new space as needed, you know? And it's not like, well, there's various versions of that that people may be more or less comfortable with. Those are the
simple
end states.
Yeah.
Well, I think, like, important to kind of bring this, like into the monastery realm of,
mm-hmm.
like, the uniform habit question,
yeah.
Is, like, to not live as an individual, because, you know, we're, like, monks wearing a habit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that same kind of thing, like, there's a community. I'm not supposed to stand out any more than my brother does.
Mm-hmm.
We're in pursuit of Christ together as one.
Yep.
So it's not to live as an individual, but it's also not to lose the fact that you are an individual, if that makes sense. Because the word monk comes from monos, which means one, and alone.
Solitary.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
So to be alone with Christ. So we still have to encounter Christ as an individual first.
Sure.
And encounter him also as a community, because we're a body of Christ. So, like, a soldier, you know, when he's in war, he has his gun. Right?
Yeah.
He's still shooting individually.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
A monk, when he's praying, he's still praying individually as him. He hasn't lost his identity, but he loses the individualism that says, like, it's about me. Right?
Mm-hmm.
A habit, like, is worn, I think, as, like, an outward sign, like, this is no longer about me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, what I wear is set by the monastery. It's also black to remind us that we're about to die at any time.
Mm.
And if we're about to die at any time, then, like, whatever we believe is, like, most important about us, or, like, has, like, greatest importance on the world, is gone in a day when we die. So yeah, it just is. There's it's a kind of a. I really love the symbol of the habit. And actually, I have a video on like the symbolism of each part of the habit, yeah. which is really cool. And I expect my favorite, I think, part of the habit is the scapular, which Jesus says, you know, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm meek and humble of heart. And, you know, I will, when Christ says, take my yoke, he's saying he'll yoke himself with us.
Yeah.
And that's what the scapular is supposed to be. It's like putting on the yoke of Jesus. Just like a soldier puts on his rucksack, you know, like a monk puts on his rucksack, he puts on his scapular.
That's pretty cool.
And like the hood is supposed to be like our helmet, you know. It's just, it is really cool. There is a lot of military themes in the rule, actually. Mm-hmm. Benedict says that we come together to do battle for Christ the King. Mm-hmm. And we only stop fighting when we're dead, you know, like mm-hmm. there's no end point. It's like, oh, I fought enough, right?
Yeah.
Because for us, there's like no end point to the spiritual warfare.
Yeah.
It's perpetuating. So, yeah. What do you like? I mean, I guess you chimed in already, Nate, but like, what does it mean for like being on an outside and to like see like I mean, you've been on sports teams, so you've had like right. uniform.
Well, he's like, technically in uniform today.
He's
the only one actually in uniform today.
This summer.
That's right.
And he's a staff member out there.
Which is why he hasn't been on
podcast. Amazing Catholic camp with a terrible name. Yeah.
Yeah, this is why he's been MIA. He's been sucked up there. And this is his like staff shirt.
Yeah, bro.
So what does it mean? Like,
love the feeling of raw like, polyester against my skin. This thing is brutal when it's like 90 degrees, but sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's important that like the staff are up, like always, they're wearing shirts that stand out from everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're a go-to because you wear that. Like,
yeah.
What, like, I don't know, does that mean anything
yeah,
to you?
Well, yeah, I think so, because what you guys were just talking about is what your habit or your uniform communicates to you, the wearer.
Mm.
But there's also the other side of it, which is like what the uniform communicates to an outsider.
Yep.
And like when you're wearing a uniform, be like, a goofy polyester polo. Well, okay, sorry. I don't know if any CFL people watch this. It's not that bad, but it is uncomfortable. A polo or a sick habit or a dope uniform, whatever you're wearing, it communicates to any observer that you have a particular position, you have some authority, you have a role and duties that go along with that. You have power, and then, you know, in the words of Uncle Ben, with great power comes great responsibility. So, like, they when they see a uniform, a military uniform, you think, oh, that's a defender of our nation. And some people have very different reactions to that, some negative, some positive, but, like, there are associations you have with that. When you see a monk habit, you expect, like, I expect, oh, some level of holiness, commitment to Christ, and, like, that's someone who's given their life to God. And so there's admiration, there's, like, expectation. And I think knowing that, if you're putting on a uniform and you're aware of the assumption someone's going to have if they see you wearing it, that is sort of calls you to a certain way of like living and carrying yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
Because if you're like, okay,
yeah,
if I'm
yeah.
going to wear a military uniform, I better behave in a way that's respectful to my country, like represents the United
yeah,
States
they represent more
Army
than
well.
This.
Yeah, because you're not representing yourself as an individual, you're representing yourself as a military person. Or if you're wearing a habit, you better act in a healthy monastic way. Because if you go around behaving scandalously while you're wearing a habit, that's doing damage to yourself and the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, there's a certain level of responsibility, I think, that comes with a uniform.
Oh, yeah. That's solid points.
So that's just the uniform.
Yeah.
True.
There's other ways in which it lines up. What do you, I mean, I have plenty of like ideas, but do you see like other areas in which like there's an overlap between monastic life and like a military lifestyle or like just the military like in general?
Well, I just had one, but if you
yeah.
want to go talk.
Oh, go ahead.
I was thinking like in America we have civilians and then we have the military, and ultimately we're all united in the cause. I mean, not all Americans, but all good Americans are united in the cause of, you know, protecting our nation and upholding our nation. But the military are the first line of defense. They're the ones who actually go out and fight the battles, and then the civilians are the ones at home supporting the effort, however they can during, like, wartime. But I think I see a similarity between that and the distinction between laity and clergy that we have in the mm-hmm. church, where all of us should be united in the goal of spreading the gospel and saving souls. But the laity are the ones really kind of in the back supporting with their prayers and, like, living their life through... through supporting their families, like doing all the kind of the hard labor that goes along with that vocation. But then the clergy are the ones who are really on the front lines,
mm-hmm.
and especially like priests who are the ones who are actually saying the mass and providing confession, like providing sacramental grace. Like you guys, you those soldiers kind of on the front lines
of the
spiritual warfare. So I just thought that's kind of a similarity between soldiers and y'all clergy.
Yeah, the differentiation between those that are and those that aren't, you know. Yeah. And I know like one of the big, and part of it's like the kind of a bit of a marketing gimmick for when you're, you know, being recruited, is they, one of the catchphrases, at least in the army, is, you know, like, a little less than 1% of Americans will serve, you know?
So
it's like, you're a 1%er, you know? Sure, like, you're and that's to kind of, like, you know, add some sense of, like, wow, this really is, like, you know, a unique opportunity. This is, like, this is more than just, like, a job. This is something that many people won't ever do because they're scared, nervous, they just don't want that kind of commitment, etc. So yeah, like that unique, that breaking point between those who are and those who aren't is, I think, very, very similar in some ways. And that, in a way, that's not just monastic life, that's right. Also just like you said, clergy and laity.
Yeah,
it's even more like of a contrast in monastic life. I'm pretty sure I've looked at more recently, there are only like 8,000 Benedictine monks in the world. So, you know, 1% of the American population, we're talking...
Yeah, it's still like 0.001%
of the world's population.
That's crazy. It's even worse for nuns. There's something like 3 nuns for every million people.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Which, you think about how sad that... And, I mean, if you go back like 100 years, it was like 1,000 nuns for every million people or something like that. So it's like
really gone downhill. Well, the irony of what I'm about to say, they stopped wearing their habits.
Yeah. Dude, actually.
There was a time where there was a conversation in the monastery where we should we make habits like completely optional altogether, even during prayer. And that was like the deciding, I think, like the Holy Spirit really came in because the deciding factor was like, if we want to look like everyone else, we'll do this. If we want to actually stay monks, we won't.
Yeah.
And they stayed that way, and we continue to have vocations versus other monasteries in the United States haven't. I mean, we have had an unbroken line of guys entering the monastery since it started back in 1846. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they've always stayed, but they've at least joined.
Yeah.
This year we have 4 guys coming on Tuesday, actually. So pray for our 4 new novices.
Congrats, new novices. Sick, we'll pray for you.
But other communities like haven't had people join in like 15 years.
They're going to go extinct because they don't want to stand out.
And So
there's something attractive about... And not just superficially attractive, but like more like deeply like recognizing that there's something valuable about being willing to be one among a few, you know?
Yeah.
And not just a few in this case, you know, like, one among millions.
Very
So.
But to your point about like the different, like there's a difference, like the laity is supporting the clergy, the American citizens are supporting the military. Like from my side of things, I do not feel that as like, oh, like I'm above these people. You know, like, they should be, like, respectful of me. But rather, like, what a responsibility I have now.
Yeah.
You know, like, I've been entrusted with a lot.
Yeah.
And I feel, and I've tangibly experienced, the prayerful support of, like, the laity. And the laity outnumber the clergy, which means that their prayers outnumber them. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's just so many more prayers that they can offer. And they can sacrifice in ways, particularly in family life, that we can't.
Yeah.
Like, I do not sacrifice for kids in the way that Tom does, you know? Yeah. And that's just, like, the mutuality. While there is distinction, the Catechism talks about, like, the distinction between, like, the priesthood and religious life and the laity. There's distinction, but there's not, like, ranking in the spiritual sense. Like, we're not, like, oh, you guys are, like, different in like your relationship with God, like in the spirit. We are all experiencing spirit.
There's a higher vocation.
There is, but it shouldn't be like seen in a way that like, oh, like it's unattainable.
It's not
for you to you know, like have a relationship with God that is fulfilling completely to who you are.
Yeah.
Well, I was gonna ask about
it. I was gonna say one thing to kinda add on with that, like, I think what's unique about that trade-off between the responsibility that you have, you know, like clergy to laity, military to the people of the United States, like, is that there's just some kind of like funny things that like you're entrusted with a lot, and then in some cases maybe it'll just be like, well, this is not something that I have any control over.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
when this one funny joke I've heard a couple times in the army is you can be a sergeant who signed for keeping, maintaining $20 million worth of equipment, but you can't bring a toaster into your dorm room for risk of a fire.
Wow.
So just those funny little things that, like, you may be entrusted with significant amounts of, in that case, like, taxpayer dollar equipment, but they're going to be like, oh, you can't have a toaster.
We don't trust you that way.
We don't trust you like that. Mm-hmm. That's funny. So just funny little trade-offs like that happen, with what you're entrusted, but what you have no control over.
Right.
I think one thing that my last point on just where I see like the biggest, I mean, I think it all comes back to surrendering part of your individual's
life. Yeah.
And it all kind of comes back to that. But the regimentation of the lives of a military person and the regimentation of lives of a monk, in me, that's where I've kind of seen the most similarity. We're like, when we'll talk to you about like, oh, I got to do this and I got to do this. I'm like, man, it really does sound like the days that I had, I'm not in anymore, but the days that I had where it's like, wow, yeah, like, from 06 to 07:15 we're going to be doing PT. From 07:15 to 07:45 is showering and shaving, and from 045 to 08 is getting to the DFAC for breakfast. It's just like you have no control over your schedule, and so many people be like, I have to meet deadlines, I meet timelines, I don't get to choose when I eat or when I work out or whatever. It's just it is given to you from above.
You take a vow of obedience kind of just by joining.
Oh, you do. I mean, that's why you swear in. You swear in the military. And it's considered, extremely dishonorable to any veteran. And I think the consequences used to be far worse for, desertion or being AWOL.
Yeah.
It's a little more flexible than it used to be. That's probably because we're in peacetime, generally speaking.
Yeah,
in wartime, that's a little different.
That's death.
But, but yeah, historically, those were things that resulted in you getting hanged.
Is it how my novice master was also in the military? So like, I had this like combo, military monk guy.
Oh yeah,
and he would say that like just the best discipline, the best way we can practice obedience isn't to do like all these tons of practices. Mm-hmm. It is simply to stick to the schedule that has already been set.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you stick in, for the monks, we call it ararium. Just means like our hourly day, our plan. He said, sticking to the ararium with dedication and intentionality will be a better formation than like anything else you could do.
And like, oh, I'm going to achieve a bunch of amazing things on my own.
Because just simply being intentional with what is set before you every day, not trying to like cut corners, not trying to like do more. Because Benedict even talks about that. It's like a desire to like do so much more than the world tells you to is an ego thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
Do what you were simply told.
Yeah.
Be where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And it sounds overly simplified.
But
try doing that every day, and it gets really grinding.
Yeah. One of the phrases they really cook into in boot camp, and you'll just hear it over and over again in the military, is right place, right time, right uniform. And many people will say, if you get those things right, you're doing what you're supposed to. Right place, right time, right uniform. Just that simple.
Yeah.
Got to be here, got to look like this, and got to be ready for whatever it is that we're doing there.
But on some days, it's probably shocking how challenging that simple thing is, right?
Dude, absolutely.
I think this generation's going to, there's obviously a lot of good people, we've met some really awesome folks joining the monastery. Like, I know, guys that are joining the military that are new, and they're, they're like your age or whatever, and it still shows that there are diamonds in the rough of today. But I think those diamonds are going to get more rare because the world is so increasingly and not just individualization, but like individualization combined with like the addictions, the phone addictions.
Yeah.
So it makes you in so many ways not desire that kind of surrender, but also feel like you could just never do it. It's just like I think it's going to be harder for both communities unless there is like, and this is why the church grows by the blood of the martyrs. In some ways, I think the same you could say a little bit about the military. It's like when people are inspired by people who have made sacrifices, they're gonna, some people might shirk, some people are gonna be drawn to that.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the same, with vocations too.
Heroic virtues attractive.
Oh yeah.
It is, dude.
Just sitting around like a bump on a log never is.
Yeah. So when Top Gun first came out, there's like triple recruitment.
No, everybody enlisted for World War II right after Pearl Harbor started. I mean, like that, even though, of course, it was like known forever as the Day of Infamy, like one of the worst things that has happened to the U.S. military as a surprise. It also was one of the best things that could have happened for recruitment. Mm. And it's like suffering leads to heroism. Yeah. And like it encourages people to strive for noble things. And I think we've had sort of a, I don't know, whether you're talking about politics or the church, we've had a cushy phase of peacetime.
Yeah.
In the church, we had a while in the 20th century where it was like, oh, and like in America, like it's okay. Like it's okay to like.
Especially in the United States.
Especially in the United States. Like priests were kind of cool and like they were chill. It was a valid occupation, not just vocation.
Yeah.
And then now, thanks to a lot of struggles, which has some of them really rocked the church.
Yeah.
We realize it's not easy to be a Christian. It's not easy to be a Catholic, especially. And there's a lot of suffering that's going to go with that, especially if you're pursuing a vocation as a priest.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to get hit with attacks, not just from the devil, but from other people, mm-hmm. more than probably ever before. So it's like, that's going to turn away those who are the weak links, but it's going to draw in anyone who actually is devoted to Christ. And same way in the military, if there's actually wartime, it's going to draw in everyone who's truly patriotic.
You know, that made me think of, I was hearing a story about, this was, I don't know, early 1900s, a guy wanted to do a transterranean like crossing of Antarctica.
It's intense.
And he wanted like a certain number of guys like to do it with him. But he couldn't pay them. It was simply
Antarctica?
Yeah, I think so.
Wow.
It was simply to like just like survey it. So he put an ad in the newspaper, like continental hike of Antarctica. No pay, low chance of success,
low chance of
survival.
Yeah.
Like men needed, and like come up to this place. He only needed like 20, like 500 dudes show up for this.
Yes.
And you offer. And I'm not saying it's just dudes, you know. Like I mean, women in religious life too is a super heroic choice to make. Like offer them, like, offer something difficult with a purpose, and like just like run for it.
Yeah.
So
it's like when Benedict XVI said, like, you were not made for comfort, you're made for greatness. There's one way you could take that, which is kind of how I always used to interpret it, that like, oh, we should rise above our inclinations and strive for what's great. But really, it's not that. It's actually if we look at our deepest inclinations and our desires, they are to be great and they are to strive for things that are sacrificial. We just get generally bogged down and suppress those desires through whether it's addictions or just wasting time or lack of discipline, convenience, expediency, we sacrifice what's
general
meaningful
habits,
for...
General habits which kill your ability to think, to desire, and be capable of greatness. You know, like, there's so many habits that just lead to just general laziness. You know, like, we've obviously talked about, you know, and many people that know us, like, know how much we love exercising still, you know, and still, I mean, still in your 20s, Nate. I guess both of you are still in your 20s.
Yeah, I just got to my 20s, bro.
Yeah,
just
he
slow
just
down.
Got
his,
I have only a little time
slow
left.
Slow down. Yeah.
And we're, Sam and I, brother Francisco and I, are about to run in a track meet tomorrow. So we're going to relive our track glory days.
I'm also not running my habit, in case anyone wanted to know that.
You should hang around in your habit, though, and then, like, superhero
that
mode.
Be
That'd
cool.
be dope.
That'd be a great way to, like, talk to some people. Anyway, having habits of... Assuming habits in your life, again, back to like the regimentation, being willing to follow, like, not overcomplicate, not set excessive goals, not set too low, somewhere kind of in the middle, you know, the sweet spot of having regimentation in your life will, I think, just stoke naturally those healthy desires of like, I'm made to do more. And that's, again, for the military, why I'm grateful for doing it is I don't think I was ever like an inherently lazy person, but I think I was probably close to being a kind of more inherently, I don't know, trepidatious, just hesitant to try new things, hesitant to like assume new responsibilities. And there was, in the 8 years that I was in, you have to in the military, you have to as a monk. There's no like, oh, do you want to, Sergeant Whitaker, like try to do this? It's like, hey, Sergeant Whitaker, you better figure this out. Yeah. Like, okay, I guess I got to figure this out.
Right.
And just being able to have those opportunities really helped me kind of come out of that shell, if you will. And, you know, again, a lot of that's habit building. It's being willing to like, you know, there's a great commencement speech given by a Navy SEAL from
making
like
your bed.
Yeah, make your bed every day. It's a simple thing.
Yep.
You start out with one success, you're probably going to do more.
Yes.
You know, and that
Jordan Peterson talks about that too.
He does. Jordan Peterson talks about like when it comes to being disciplined and growing good habits, one of the first steps is being disciplined enough to not set overly lofty goals, because then you're just going to fail on those and then give up again.
Yeah.
He says, do something that you would do that you also could do that would make your life better.
Yeah, yeah.
So that takes humility, though.
Oh, yeah.
To be like, oh, wow. Like, for me, I might want to be, like, say, working out every day for an hour and a half. But in reality, like, it'd be a lot for me to just get up and go for a walk every day. Like, okay, yeah. Let's start with that.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're about to get...
What? Oh, no. That was
good. We're about to get overrun by some kiddos. I think we'll wrap up. Just to acknowledge real fast, I'm sure we'll get questions about this. Like, okay, so if you're not in your habit right now, you don't have to wear it all the time. Like, when do you wear it? So, like, for military, there's, like, actual off-duty.
Yeah.
I'm never off-duty for my vocation. So, like, that, in that sense,
I don't have to be holy,
like,
right,
I
now.
Should be, like, in my habit as much as possible. My requirement actually to wear my habit is at prayer, at mealtimes, and, like, particular monastic functions. Outside of that, I'm not required. But it's, you know, I should always do it more. And I wear my habit most of the time.
He does.
Whenever you're in public, I don't think I've been in public with you that I can remember where you've been this, other than maybe like going out to dinner with our immediate family. So I feel like our immediate family is like,
that's pretty much it.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Cause I was out to coffee yesterday with a friend. I was in my habit.
Yep.
I mean, I camp all week, you know, doing all these different things. So, but if you guys want to like bash me for not having a habit, go ahead. Let's see.
That's okay. Oh, he's just becoming a little
we're
bit
getting defensive,
little
real
bit
quick.
Progressive.
No,
bit
I mean, no, probably anticipating.
Yeah, no.
Anticipating.
What I've gotten from people when I wear my habit, I can only imagine. Well, thank you for joining us for another episode of All in the Brotherhood. I hope you have a wonderful and awesome day. God bless.
God bless.